The following program is intended for mature audiences.
This is a world you never understand, and you always fear. But you don't understand.
Because I'm a genius.
How come I know so much? What the hell is going on around here? Who the hell are you people?
It's getting weird!
And here we go.
It's the Riffs and Rants podcast with your host, Johnny Teflon.
All I know is this violates every canon of respectable broadcasting.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Establishment. And we'll be right back after the first gem of the day. Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Riffs and Rants podcast with yours truly, Johnny Teflon, flying solo again, although I do expect some help of sorts in the immediate future. But for now, you got little old me, and you know me, I always got an agenda. So our first gem of the day, speaking of agendas, was a tune called Sky High from the band known as Jigsaw. And that came out as a single in 1975. It was a theme song to the film The Man from Hong Kong and actually reached number 3 on the Billboard Top 100. And it's a typical, like, 70s, you know, action movie theme. Pretty light on the lyrics. Pretty heavy on the overproduction. And our theme, if you will, today for the gems is going to be that all three are going to be picked, plucked, if you will, from the genre known as AM Gold. And these were songs, either rock songs or pop songs, that got super heavy rotation on our AM radios back in the day. Yes, I'm just barely old enough to remember that. So that's one of the reasons why we started with that song. The other could be possibly that if you construe the lyrics a certain way, and we know this is all subjective, it could be about a romance that just, you know, got turned on its ear and the guy's yelling at the girl because she screwed everything up. Or perhaps it could apply to any in particular shit show where things go from bad to worse to foobar in a heartbeat. So I tell you what, we're going to focus on the latter, okay? Because the presidency of one Joseph Biden is falling down like a house of cards around his feet. And the Democrats, rather than sticking to their guns and going with the guy that got him to the dance, okay, they're, you know, to badly paraphrase Groucho Marx line, you know, this is our chosen presidential candidate. If you don't like him, we have others. Yeah? Because they're kind of bailing on Joe like rats on a sinking ship.
Iceberg, right ahead!
So what we're going to talk about for the opening segment today is a little bit of a deep dive into the sad tale of Joseph Biden and his administration. Let's look at a couple things. Clearly, he's been sequestered away more than any other president since the day he was elected. And when he does come out, you know, he likes to fancy himself Sean Connery, but what we're getting for 3.5 years is old and ornery. And we're finding out now, of course, after that historic debate meltdown, and the ensuing interviews that have come after that, we'll touch on those. The guy is, look, he can't do the job, all right? And I'm not even talking about re-election. He can't do the job now. So let's all pray that we can get through the next 4 months until whatever eventuality. But, you know, he got elected by saying he was going to be a transitional one-term president, okay? And as they say, apparently absolute power corrupts absolutely. I remember the interview where he said it, and it almost, though I still didn't want him to be president, it almost assuaged my fears about his age at the time and his propensity to bungle and stumble and talk out his ass. I figured, hey, it is going to be radically different than Trump's administration. You know, things can only get better. And maybe he can use those Machiavellian wiles of his that he's cultivated after, what, 40-some-odd year in politics and get things done. So I was kind of on the glass half-full kind of thing, like a lot of Americans were. But look what we got now. And I mean, it's been a secret to everybody. I mean, as far as what they've sold us a bill of goods. The DNC pushed him through as their candidate without any debates or primaries. Nothing.
Now you just can't leave.
And we have to think that they had to have seen the situation months ago and chose not to do anything about it. And this is what you get for being shifty and sneaky and trying to prop up a puppet leader to the American people. He's so far gone, he really thinks he can do the job. But as millions of Americans know and face, you know, these type of difficult decisions every day, there comes a time to take away Dad's driver's license for his good as well as others. Truly, folks, this is part of getting old. The man's an octogenarian, okay? Yes, there are some very sharp octogenarians out there, but you don't need a mathematician to realize that the majority cannot do a job that is so demanding on your faculties. I mean, even in terms of not having all the answers, but having the strategies, yes, that's part of the job. And knowing who to go to and when to formulate a strategy, that's part of the job too. So I just can't foresee this figure who now is standing upon a soapbox of supposed wisdom simply because he's now an octogenarian, gives me no comfort at night. None. Kudos to Lester Holt from ABC News and his interview. We had one a couple days earlier after the debate meltdown with George Stephanopoulos. That was kind of a fluff piece. And I had commented that in the last episode. But Lester Holt, God bless him, came out like a real journalist and kept asking the questions that we wanted answers to. He was met with stonewalling, gaslighting, and just flat out, you know, blatant lies. And for the company, party that always loves to brand Trump as, you know, the biggest liar since Satan had Eve eat the apple, look what they're doing. What's a bigger lie than telling the American people that they're in good hands with the president that they're propping up? There is no bigger lie than that.
Message!
So in terms of all of these Democrats now jumping ship.
Iceberg, run ahead!
Let's look at George Clooney's letter. He was the first one, okay? After already having, like, what, 2 weeks prior, this mega fundraiser that he sponsored, you know, coming out and saying, Joe, I love you to death, but maybe it's time to step aside, okay? And the conclusion that people were able to draw, logically so, that this would have had to have had Obama's blessing. So there's boom, one, boom, two. Then he got a little assortment, a gaggle of, you know, mid-tier. If it was a wrestling card, they'd be on, like, the mid-carders.
Thunderlips is here, in the flesh, baby.
Your Naglers, your Adam Schiffs, you know. Now they all start coming out of the woodwork. And we're kind of waiting now for the big shoes to drop. The Chuck Schumers, the Nancy Pelosi's. And sure enough, without coming out and saying it, enough leaks came out that they, too, had the difficult conversations with Joe saying, I think it's time for you to step aside, or the way they choose to, you know, paint this picture, passing the torch, okay? They had plenty of time to pass the torch, folks. They thought they could get away with it. They got caught. And like you tell a child when they do something bad, you know, and they're like, I'm sorry. You're not sorry because you did it. You're sorry because you got caught, okay? And give it a chance, they do it again. And I'm not saying that the Republicans in similar circumstances wouldn't do the same thing, okay? But this week, for a change, they're not on the hot seat. It's the Democrats. So I am almost moved to a point of pity for Joe Biden. Almost, okay? You know, because in spite of everything, you know, the villain of this story is not Joe Biden. It's the enablers, or rather the Machiavellian strategists, which is how they paint themselves, that are now publicly abandoning him to both save face and their grand scheme and their own asses, because a lot of them are up for election and they know that people tend to vote from the top down. So if people are going to toss Joe out to the curb, a lot of these, again, mid-card acts, they're going to get tossed to the curb as well, as they probably rightly should. You know, and in the list of enablers and puppet masters, sadly, this is just my opinion, I'm going to have to include his family as well. I mean, Jill Biden, are you that starved for the spotlight that you've got to do this to your husband? Have some mercy on the man. I mean, I don't know if, even if he were to come out and remove himself from the race, I don't know if his legacy, throw that in air quotes, can or should be saved. I don't know. There's a lot of presidents that leave office on the downturn, okay? And frankly, you know, better than him have left office on the downturn. But in the same spirit that LBJ decided not to run again, you know, presidential scholar like Joe Biden makes himself out to be, and with all these years of wisdom that he's standing upon, shouldn't it seem apparent that this is a similar situation and he needs to bow out? And if I was them, look, I'd bow out. I'd throw up Kamala. You know she's going to get her ass handed to her, rightly so. But it gives them 4 years to sharpen their swords and come out licking their wounds and learning from their mistakes and having a shot at it the next time. Because, yeah, you know what, folks? There's elections every 4 years. It's not the end of the world. Sometimes the country gets better in that 4 years. Sometimes it gets worse. But it's never ended. And all this talk about the end of democracy and the greatest threat to democracy ever, all this hyperbolic bullshit is just that. There are a lot of things that have, you know, come into prominence during Biden's administration that the average salt and earth American does not approve of. Okay. And I don't say that with any disdain. From the Rust Belt and the flyover states and all this, that, and the other thing. Look, it's basically half the population voted for him, half the population voted for Trump. So you can cut your losses and have Kamala come in and just try and be a bridge and maybe try and, you know, do things to enact some kind of unity in this country. That's certainly something you could accomplish in 4 years. Hell, we've done it in less, without a catastrophic event to kind of push it through the door. There's so much productive legislation they could still do without catering to the squad and all these other groups.
Boy lovers.
Trash.
Morons.
You know, do away with DEI. It doesn't work.
The world needs ditch diggers too.
Enact a practical plan for immigration.
Okay, USA.
And halt the flood at the border. You don't have to turn it off. You don't have to throw a literal wall around all four sides of the country. No, and nobody's saying that, okay? But you need to come up with a plan. They can do this if they should win with Kamala. Now, as everyone's probably heard ad nauseum, this situation as it is Joe Biden's decision to make, okay? But I have to say, you know, Bill Maher nailed it on his program last week when he said, you know, saying it's Joe Biden's decision to make is like asking the drunk if he's okay to drive. You got to kind of take him out of the equation. And if it means enacting the 25th Amendment, then so be it. Okay? This man's behavior is anything worse than I ever saw in Mutiny on the Bounty or the Kane Mutiny. And sometimes you have to mutiny. I mean, that's why we have the amendment. Just in case. So that's a thought there. I mean, he's got the delegates. He's got the war chest, both of which can only be logically transferred based upon precedent to Kamala. So again, give it to her. Give her the ball. Let her run with it.
Usually one must go to a bowling alley to meet a woman of your stature. Yes.
One of two things is going to happen. Let's say she wins and she's a fantastic president. You know what? We all win that way. Actually, three things can happen. So you got that first scenario. And then let's say the second scenario is she wins and she's a horrible president. Now we all lose. And as a bonus, it would probably be the end of this whole DEI movement. Because let's face it, folks. Let's face it. She checks off boxes. That's it. And the minute Joe had stood up in front of a nationwide audience and said, you know, before even naming her, had picked his running mate to be a black woman. Really? Really? I mean, line up all the best candidates. And if one is a black woman, let's say out of the best 10 candidates, if one is a black woman, awesome. If 9 of them are a black woman, even better. Okay? But hey, while we're at it, what do I always say? Give a shot to everybody. Let's throw in some Asians. Let's throw in some Hispanics. If you're going to do it right. Don't say, I'm opening up the floodgates and this is the kind of person I want. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. And as of late, and that's the only thing I'm going to say right now about this assassination attempt, and perhaps a little piece at the very end. Trump's calling for unity and scaling down, as did Joe Biden. You know, calling to scale down the rhetoric and the vilification and the portrayal of individuals in the media as the Antichrist or Hitler or whatever. Because if you keep saying that enough times, it's going to stick in people's head, both smart and ignorant. And this is what they're going to think of when you say those words. So cut the crap.
Let's just cut the shit and get down to business. I ain't got all day.
Everybody should be preaching togetherness and neighborly and you know, like Trump said in his speech at the RNC, he wants to be the president for all Americans, not half, okay? And look, I'm not naive. Whether it's true or not is irrelevant. The message you're putting out and the consistency of the message is what matters. And I have to say, I think the Republicans got it all over them this cycle. And that's all I got to say about that. So again, it's supposedly going to happen any day now. Joe's got to make a decision or someone's got to make it for him. But there comes a time when you got to step aside for the betterment of the country. And that MO, the betterment of the country, is supposed to be the only reason anybody is sitting in the Oval Office in the first place. There you go. Boom shakalaka, it's time for the middle gem. And we're going to carry on with our theme of AM gold. Something that maybe kind of sort of has to do with the subtopic. Because no, I'm not even halfway through my tank of venom for this episode. So we're going to take you to the middle gem with a little tune by Mr. R.B. Greaves called Take a Letter, Maria. We'll be right back in a few minutes with some things and stuff.
Last night, as I got home, about a half past ten, there was the woman I thought I knew in the arms of another man. I kept my cool, I ain't no fool. Let me tell you what happened then. I packed some clothes and I walked out, and I ain't going back again. So take a letter, Maria, address it to my wife. Say I won't be coming home, gotta start a new life. We'll take a letter, Maria, address it to my wife. Send a copy to my lawyer, gotta start a new life. You've been many things, but most of all, a good secretary to me. And it's times like this I feel you've always been close to me. Was I wrong to work nights to try to build a good life? All work and no play has just cost me a while. So take a letter, Maria, no, address it to my wife. Say I won't be coming home, gotta start a new life. We'll take a letter, Maria, address it to my wife. Send a copy to my lawyer, gotta have a new life. What a man loves a woman, it's hard to understand that she would find more pleasure in the arms of another man. I never really noticed how sweet you are to me. It just so happens I'm free tonight. Would you like to have dinner with me? Take a letter, Maria, address it to my wife. Say I won't be coming home, gotta start a new life. Oh, take a letter, Maria, address it to my wife. Send a copy to my lawyer, gotta have a new life. Oh, take a letter, Maria.
And we're back. Yes, that was a tune called Take a Letter, Maria from R.B. Greaves back in 1969, released as a single. And that little ditty went all the way up to number 2 in the USA on the Billboard Top 100. Ain't that something? Catchy little tune. Catchy little tune. And you know what? It's a happy ending because he winds up hooking up with a secretary after the wife did him wrong. That's good. Yeah, I like a middle, beginning, and an end, and everybody loves a happy ending.
Things go well, I might be showing her my O face. Oh, oh, oh. You know what I'm talking about. Oh.
So, speaking of endings, the U.S. Postal Service, yeah, remember them? They've announced that forever stamps are once again going up, and they're going up from 68 cents to 73 cents. Okay, well, you know, it's 7 cents. Wait, what is that? It's 5 cents, okay? But to you bean counters out there, that's a 7% increase. And they already increased it once this year. And they're saying, like a broken record, that, you know, these added funds will somehow both save and modernize this massive money pit that's in the backyard of every American taxpayer. Oh, the post office. So, look, what comes to mind when you think of the post office? Well, perhaps it's the days of yore when you knew your postal carrier's name, and they'd either walk around, put the money in the slot, "Hi, Mrs. Smith, hi, Mr. Jones," you know, your dog would bark at him, and it was that old little chestnut of a joke. Oh, the dog's chasing the mailman. Yeah, they ride around in most cases in these little cardboard trucks. I mean, I don't even know what that is, and I'm a car guy. I guess they're specially made for the post office, but it's just like ugly and inefficient looking. And damn, but let's not even go that far ahead. I mean, the facilities, the post offices themselves. When was the last time you went to the post office? Do you know where the closest post office is? Do you know what their hours are? I mean, which is more convenient, going to the post office or going to the DMV? Never mind convenient, which is a more miserable experience? I mean, at least many of the DMVs across the country and the states have tried privatization, and maybe it's time for the post office to do that en masse as well. I mean, you go into the DMV to, you know, extend that metaphor, it's, you know, you're going to wait. Unless you luck out, and those are the best damn days. You go right in, they call your number, you do your business, there's no complications, great, goodbye, you're on your way. And you're going to be picking up a ticket in most cases that says like 80, and you know the guy next to you has one, so you know you're going to be there a while. But there's a lot more people working. You go into the average post office, and they got like one person at the counter, and you hear all kinds of racket and commotion going on, you know.
Just about everybody works in a post office as an alien.
On the other side of the little fake walls that they throw up, where they're sorting the mail and they're loading up their trucks or whatever the hell they're doing. I think they're playing, dice or three-card Monty in the back, because it sounds like they're having a good old time. But if you walk in a post office and you see, like, three old people in front of you, you just know your ass is going to be there for 30 minutes. And most of us, because, you know, work, we're going to the post office on our lunch break for things. To send out a package, you know, sometimes to check your mailbox, you know, if you still do that, which is just weird. But yeah, all it takes is three people to cause a horrific logjam in the post office. Everything in there is gray, or that blue that isn't really a blue, and then, you know, they got the packaging goods, which, yeah, luckily are free for now. I'm sure they're gonna start charging for that soon. You know, the correct kind of tape you're supposed to use. And then I've got this other little kiosk of, like, wrapping paper and fun boxes, and I don't even know how that fits in, but okay, that.
One unused prophylactic, one soiled.
You've also got the occasional stamp collecting enthusiasts.
I'm a nerd.
Like, how is that still a thing? But they got special stamps for those people and collections to buy and whatnot. You can get your passport stuff done there, because it's not totally online yet, I don't think, you know. But again, that takes time. You gotta hope you go in there and it's not a line of people waiting for stuff. I mean, shit, going into the post office around the holidays is an elevated level of sadomasochism. Don't even do that to yourself. I just, yeah, it's a nightmare. But the thing is, who really mails anything other than greeting cards anyway? And by the way, the average greeting card these days is, let's say, $5.99. So for a total of $6.72, you can do the same thing for virtually free by picking up the damn phone and just saying hi. I mean, seriously, greeting cards? Nah. Now, waste of money. And then, in my case, because I happen to live out in the middle of nowhere, Amazon funnels all of my packages through the Postal Service. And even though it's coming through Amazon Prime and they're telling me it's going to take X amount of days to get here, many, many times it's late. And worse yet, many, many times the box is like tossed because I've got a decent-sized double-wide driveway with an incline and They don't even want to walk up there. So the minute the steps up to the house are visible, they're shot putting my packages so they don't have to take the extra 10 steps.
What we've got here is failure.
So I come home and everything's smashed and dented. You know, I used to buy like energy drinks and stuff like that in bulk from Amazon. And it got to the point where half the cans were empty because they had gotten tossed, smashed, exploded, leaked all over everything. And that's what I was coming home to. So yeah, so they really can't even do that. They're arriving delayed, dented or destroyed, sometimes all three.
I meant to do that.
And then, you know, they're saying that, again, some of these funds are going towards modernization. And now they want to have an all-electric delivery fleet of whatever those vehicles are by the next, like, 4 years. Okay, great. Super. As we found out last winter for the first time on a large scale, the batteries aren't really holding up too well in extreme temperatures. So for the geometric half of the country that has an absolutely horrible winter with sub-zero temps and a boatload of snow, I guess you could throw the rain, sleet, or snow, no one shall keep us from all our pouring around. You just throw that out the window because the vehicles won't be able to hack it. So you got that, okay? Privatize it. I think it's a good idea. You can employ more people, you save the taxpayers money, and you can fulfill that little pipe dream you have of modernization. Because a lot of that modernization that they're bandying about is going to cut jobs. Because look, it's only a matter of time before even the mail will be delivered by drones. You get a powerful drone, you got a preset route, you know where everybody's mailbox are. Maybe we all got to trade in our mailboxes for something that's like a top loader, you know, and the drone comes to the spot, it signals the mailbox, the door opens up, boop, drops your mail in there, you're good to go. Things like catalogs day and phone books, we don't need any of that shit anymore. It's called the internet,
thank
folks.
God for them internets.
Learn how to use it. We're at the point where I'm not really computer savvy. Doesn't cut the mustard anymore. It just doesn't. Because look at all this waste now where we could be doing so much better, right? Now, in terms of the postal workers themselves, look, the vast majority of them are great and they do their job and hooray and yeah, okay, there I said it. There's your disclaimer. The reality is you need to make the test a little harder, okay? You should pay those people well, not only because it's a government job and they do put up with a load of shit from the general public. They do. I admit it. I've seen it. Make it a harder job to get that. That's all I'm saying, you know? Or make it both harder to get and yet more appealing to get. Give them a raise. Because no matter what we do moving forward, the workforce of the postal workers is going to get smaller. Nowhere during this diatribe have you heard me say, gee whiz, they need help in those post offices. No, they don't. They just need better help, not more. Simple as that. So, that's my short little rant and rave on the U.S. Postal Service. And we're going to jump right in to our third gem of the day because our wrap-up's going to be a little longer than usual. So, continuing with our theme of AM Gold, I'm going to give a little tune for you from Mr. Billy Preston called Nothing From Nothing. And I got a fun story about this one as well as the goings-on in the station. A funny story from the real life of me and a wrap-up. So stay tuned. We'll be back. It's too cold for me.
it's too low to see.
That's just a good tune. Good tune by Mr. Billy Preston called Nothing From Nothing. And that came off his album, The Kids and Me, back in 1974. All my AM gold comes from the 70s. That's the time frame. And believe it or not, that tune, albeit incredibly catchy, overachieved and hit number one on the Billboard Top 100. And, fun fact, I did not know this until I did my research, that was the first song, he was the first musical guest doing that song ever on Saturday Night Live. Did not know that. I always thought it was Paul Simon, but apparently, nope, Billy Preston. So ain't that some shit. And the reason I played that song also, not just because it's a great little nugget of AM gold, the concept, something from nothing is nothing. So, wow, you could address the Biden administration with that. Thinking they're going to hatch an egg with only one chicken. Great. Yeah, you need more to it than that. And the post office pipe dream of making things modern and better. Now, because look, you've had how many years? And you've steadily declined over the last 20 years at an alarming, alarming rate. So you had your chance.
I do believe in you. I just know you're going to fail.
Nothing from nothing means nothing. Remember that. Alrighty, so off the bat, what's going on Big Boom Radio? Well, we got a new member of the Classic Rock Showcase Club, finally got around to doing one for Mr. Warren Zevon. Such a great artist, so very, very well respected throughout the musical community in the genre of rock and roll. And, you know, sadly passed away, I believe he was only 56, from mesothelioma. A quirky guy. I mean, musically very, very sound. Played a multitude of instruments. And his lyrics, you know, they would say that Warren Zevon could write on one page what it would take other people 400 pages to do. And he had a singular, snarky, dark sense of humor that would appear in a lot of his songs, which just added to the catchiness, you know? It's just that dark sense of humor in many cases. Yeah, it was easy to add him in there, and as well as my late friend Michael Sean Lee was also a big fan of Warren Zevon, so I'm glad I got a chance to do that. Otherwise, just putting in the work, folks, putting in the work. The listenership is up, so I can't say enough thank yous about that, as well as listenership in this podcast. Glad you're doing it. Like I said, there is some help on the way. So it's the days probably of just me and you are numbered. So sorry, so sad, but it'll be better. It'll be better with some quality help, which I think is on the way. So as I said earlier, I didn't want to do a piece on the assassination attempt of July 13th, mostly because you know, the story over a week later is still developing on so many levels. And obviously, the event has received non-stop news coverage to the point where, you know, my simple, humble perspective brings nothing new to the table. How's that for self-awareness? I have a lot of thoughts on it, and maybe someday, you know, it's fit to throw out some ideas. I'm not a conspiracy guy. I never have been, because anybody can come up with these things if they sit there and obsess about any of this shit long enough. I do agree that there is some blatant incompetence on the upper echelon of the CIA. I'm sorry, not CIA, the Secret Service, an organization which I still have nothing but the utmost respect for. But I don't like this trend, which we've seen in this administration more than any other, where these people don't get fired. You and I, when we go to work every day, we're expected to perform up to a certain expectation. And sometimes those expectations are in black and white. These are your duties. You're expected to execute these at an acceptable level of quality. Otherwise, your services are no longer needed. Why this would not apply to the head of this particular branch of our justice system, in charge of not just protecting the president, okay, but as people often forget, forgeries and printing money, counterfeiting, are also part of the job of the Secret Service, exclusively. I hope they're not treating that with the same kind of ambivalence that they did Trump's security detail that day. And again, I don't want to get too far in it with the local cops not meshing well, you know, with those in uniform. The video of the obvious DEI hires that have become internet meme famous at this point. You know, I choose to err on the side of those agents that stormed the stage and possibly saved the president's life. Mad Bravo Zulu to them. And thank you, you know. People look at this and they're actually criticizing willy-nilly the job that these agents do. I'm sorry, when's the last time you signed up for anything where part of your job description is to give your life if necessary? So shut your mouth. Yeah, everybody at MSNBC, just shut your mouth.
You are all equally worthless.
So, I'm not going to go into the whole thing. See, I'm good at reeling it back. I'm never going to be radicalized. I just hate stupidity. But I will share with you folks something. First time ever. As Johnny Teflon, and no, it's not my real name. I play a character on this podcast, and I have for the last 4 years. A lot of my opinions are truthful. Let's say most of them are truthful. Any facts to substantiate those opinions are all truthful. I've never told a lie in this show, and I never will. But I've always had to keep my personal life separate from the character that I play on this to hopefully entertain you, as well as, I don't know, just inform and start up some rational debate and conversation. But I will share with you that in my youth, I worked for Donald Trump as a young man in my early 20s. And had several occasions where I got to meet the man and interact. And I want to share with you one of those stories that I had. And when I'm done, I'll tell you why. Working in one of Donald Trump's hotels, I was on duty one night as a bellman. And he was flying in, as he often did, because our hotel had the helipad. And he had his own residence there. So I get the call at night. Johnny, come on up. Mr. Trump's coming in. We need to get his luggage and whatnot. So I was all excited. And it was in the winter, and we were in the middle of a nor'easter, as the nor'easters used to just mollywop Atlantic City constantly. And I go up there, and his regular bodyguard was already waiting in the elevator. You know, hi, John, how are you? I'm good. How are you, John? Good. All right. And he was in his custom Sea King. And I could see Mr. Trump through the window of the helicopter talking with someone else who I didn't recognize. And you could tell that they were wrapping up a conversation. And the bodyguard says, okay, I think he's about to come out. Why don't you head out there? So I head out there. And to paint the scene, it's, like I said, a nor'easter. So you've already got horizontal sleet kicking in, as well as the wind from the propellers of the helicopter. You know, luckily it's an elevated propeller, so no, you don't got to duck your head and run in like at the opening to MASH. But I'm sitting out there for a good couple minutes now because the conversation has not been truncated as we thought. And finally, the hatch opens up, you know, the stairs roll down. One of the pilots or one of the crew comes out, puts the bags down. I grab them, and there, you know, then there's more bags that had to come out. Finally, Mr. Trump comes out and walks down the steps of the helicopter and is now beside me as we walk back into the elevator landing building up there. And we all get into the elevator, and we now have a 15-floor ride down to his residence. Kind of like that scene from Blues Brothers when they're in the elevator, and I think they're playing Girl from Ipanema as chaos, you know, reigns around them. We're coming down the elevator, and here I am, young man full of fit and vigor and nice head of hair, which is now actually blown off to a cone on the side of my head and is frozen from the ice, as is the right-hand side of my body, just encrusted with ice. So I am standing in the middle in this elevator between Mr. Trump and his bodyguard, and within about a minute, Mr. Trump breaks the silence, and he kind of looks down at me, very tall man, and I come at about 5'10", 5'11", on a good day. Looks down at me and kind of has a muffled, just a tiny guffaw, almost imperceptible. But I look up, and he is kind of looking at me and smiling, and he reaches into his pocket and pulls out a 20 and hands it to me and says, "Here, I'm very sorry about that." That one little nugget in time has stayed with me my entire life. And I had other interactions, and this one was the one that I remember and is most important to me, because that is always and always will be the man I think of when I hear Donald Trump. And you will have other people that have known him say the very same thing. It's not fluff, folks. He's a human being, you know. And when I was watching, like so many of you, the live telecast of this rally and then listening to it and everything, and it accepted, you know, the Donald Trump that is now, the guy that, you know, has the over-the-top hyperbole and is so bombastic with everything and, you know, sometimes takes liberties with the truth, but the message is always true, which is what matters. When I watched that unfold, it was similar but different. You know, believe me, apples and oranges. But I recognized a feeling in me that I hadn't felt since I watched the events unfold on 9/11. And for me, speaking only for me, this was a little, again, a little piece of my America, of my youth, that somebody was trying to take away. And I'm a very sentimental person. I'm sorry if my voice had choked up earlier recounting this story. But I'm a very sentimental person and a very patriotic person. And I love America with just warts and all. Okay, and it's that same approach that I treat my relationships with a lot of people. And I think in you know, educated parlance, that's called emotional maturity. But I do believe that only a child thinks of things in extremes and only black and white. It's an easy urge when things are going wrong and we don't agree to just be reactionary like this. But to the point of ever wanting to hurt somebody because of my feelings towards them or their message or their politics or whatever, and the way it's so prevalent in this election cycle, this get rid of them one way or the other mentality, again, I can't buy into it, and I refuse to buy into it, and I will not be radicalized. And I encourage everybody within the sound of my voice on either side of the fence, do not be radicalized. These are our neighbors. And whoever wins, and whatever ideological mindset wins the next 4 years, I would remind people of the surrender of the Civil War at Appomattox, when the Union troops, you know, rose up with a cheer, and General Grant admonished them, no, no, this is not time for that. These are your brothers and your neighbors, once again, and your fellow American citizens. So the sooner we get back on track to some level of civility and common decency, the better off we're all going to be, folks. Because I tell you what, I shudder to think what we'd be talking about right now had the bullet met its mark and killed President Trump. Imagine just for a second before we go today, what would have happened? Riots in the streets, National Guard probably in many locations getting called out, the hatred spewing, the venom spewing nonstop across all the media platforms. We would have been in some serious shit, folks. So, on all fronts, toning down the rhetoric, stop dehumanizing these public figures, follow the Constitution, because it covers all this stuff, you know, the proper procedures and everything for the election. And as far as, you know, the opening topic, whatever Joe Biden decides to do, I just hope he errs on the side of decency and love for his country, which he professes to possess. Just do the right thing. And whatever decision he makes, I would like to see the conservative side complement that and not rise up with, you know, a mighty battle cry of, well, Kamala's an incompetent asshole and here's why. We know the woman's skill set. We know how she got in office. You know, sometimes the great times make the great men or women. You got to believe in that, folks. This is where we all have a shot, right? Maybe it'll be a case of that. I don't know. I'm just saying, let's be a little gentler. Now, maybe, in a realistic sense, we could be a little kinder and a little gentler. Just saying. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Thanks for joining me. And as always, I am Johnny Teflon, and we will see you on the flip side.
I remember sitting up there, blood on my knuckles, beer down my shirt, sick on my shoes, seeing the orange glow of a new dawn break and knowing in my heart life would never feel this good again. And you know what? It never did.